like to welcome everyone to another episode of Two Men and a Bible Fighting the Cosmic Battle. And I'm with my normal cohorts.
That's right.
Bob and John.
Yeah, father-in-law's here, I'm here, we're ready to go.
Yeah, you know, and as is our way, you know, we just really like to, you know, dive into the Word, you know, and just try and let it, as we were talking right before we started, you know, kind of let it hit us and
absorb it.
Yeah, and it creates, and I don't want to use the word an emotion, but it creates a reaction. Or an action.
Okay.
Or a response. Maybe good. That's a better word.
Yeah, that's right. So let's have everybody picture themselves sitting down in their favorite really large chair. Big enough for two. And the Lord's sitting next to you. He's got his arm around you. And he's holding his book in front of you as you read it together. And let's just picture that as we read Numbers chapter 19. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "This is the statute of the law which the Lord has commanded, saying, speak to the sons of Israel, that they bring you an unblemished red heifer, in which is no defect, and on which a yoke has never been placed. You shall give it to Eleazar the priest, and it shall be brought outside the camp and be slaughtered in his presence. Next, Eleazar the priest shall take some of its blood with his finger and sprinkle some of its blood toward the front of the tent of meeting 7 times. Then the heifer shall be burned in his sight. Its hide and its flesh and its blood and its refuse shall be burned. The priest shall take cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet material and cast it into the midst of the burning heifer. The priest shall then wash his clothes, bathe his body in water, and afterward come into the camp. But the priest shall be unclean until evening. The one who burns it shall also wash his clothes in water and bathe his body in water, and shall be unclean until evening. Now, the man who's clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer and deposit them outside the camp in a clean place, and the congregation of the sons of Israel shall keep it as water to remove impurity. It is a purification from sin. The one who gathers the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening, and it shall be a perpetual statute to the sons of Israel and to the alien who sojourns among them. The one who touches the corpse of any person shall be unclean for 7 days. That one shall purify himself from uncleanness with the water on the 3rd day and on the 7th day, and then he shall be clean. But if he does not purify himself on the 3rd day and on the 7th day, he shall not be clean. Anyone who touches a corpse, the body of a man who's died, and does not purify himself defiles the tabernacle of the Lord, and that person shall be cut off from Israel, because the water for impurity was not sprinkled on him. He shall be unclean. His uncleanness is still on him. This is the law when a man dies in a tent. Everyone who comes into the tent and everyone who's in the tent shall be unclean for 7 days. Every open vessel which has no covering tied down on it shall be unclean. Also, anyone who in the open field touches one who has been slain with a sword or who died naturally, or a human bone or a grave shall be unclean for 7 days. Then for the unclean person they shall take some of the ashes of the burnt purification from sin, and flowing water shall be added to them in a vessel. The clean person shall take hyssop and dip it in the water, and sprinkle it on the tent, and on all the furnishings, and on the persons who were there, and on the one who touched the bone, or the one slain, or the one dying naturally, or the grave. Then the clean person shall sprinkle on the unclean, on the 3rd day and on the 7th day. And on the 7th day he shall purify him from uncleanness, and he shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and shall be clean by evening. But the man who's unclean and does not purify himself from uncleanness, that person shall be cut off from the midst of the assembly, because he's defiled the sanctuary of the Lord, the water for impurity had not been sprinkled on him. He's unclean. So it shall be a perpetual statute for them. And he who sprinkles the water for impurity shall wash his clothes, and he who touches the water for impurity shall be unclean until evening. Furthermore, anything that the unclean person touches shall be unclean, and the person who touches it shall be unclean until evening. There's chapter 19, Jane.
So, first obvious question, I think, you know, for myself and for our listeners is, why the red heifer specifically? Is there, you know, he hasn't been that specific up till now.
No, but let's recreate the historical situation. So here you are, again, this massive group of people, million strong, and you're traveling along in the wilderness. And as we've read in Numbers up to this point, there's been a handful. I mean, six times or so, I'm not precise with that number, but around there, of just massive outbreaks of the Lord's wrath.
Right.
Right? And you have, imagine how many people on average are dying per day in this camp.
Right.
And so what are we going to do about that? Because when he says, you know, if anybody's touching a dead person and a reader in the 20th century, man, I haven't done that in a long time. You know that. Well, they were doing that almost daily. So they need something to purify. Yeah, to purify them. Because, remember, keep this in the forefront of your thoughts. I'm not sure that there is a more abhorrent thing to God than death. He did not make Adam and Eve in order for them to die.
Right.
He is opposed to death in every form and fashion. So you have a tough situation. You have lots of people dying, and that's abhorrent to him. So you got to purify from that.
Well, and that's really what we hear in this chapter is cleansing, purification, and the way that they're being instructed at this point is, water offering.
Yeah, that's right.
The ashes.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And,
go ahead.
And the aroma.
Okay.
And that's something. I mean, and it's puzzled me before. I've never brought it up, but I'm gonna ask it tonight as we look at those four things. I mean, can God smell? Because
sure.
A lot of their offerings, and maybe that sounds like a naive question, but a lot of their offerings are not meant for anything but the smoke and aroma that it would create.
He can smell, of course. I mean, he has all the senses and then some,
right.
That we have. So he can smell. I tend to think that's more metaphor when it says, a soothing aroma to the Lord, something he's pleased with,
right,
is what that stands for. But certainly he can smell. But I think you're exactly on the right track. I just want to push you further. We've used a baseball analogy in the past, So that was one coming down the pipe, and you got a fair amount of wood on that one.
All right.
but we need to hit it over the wall.
Right.
So think of death biblically in the first place in the Bible where that became a prominent subject. It was what chapter?
What is that, 4 or 5?
3. That's Genesis 3, where the serpent deceives Eve.
Oh, I was thinking of Cain and Abel.
That's right. You're right. The first murder.
Yeah.
But death entered the world in chapter 3. You remember the Lord's admonition, do not eat from that fruit, because the day you eat from that, you will die. And now here's death, the whole subject of chapter 19. And recall this, God saying to Adam, then to Adam he said, Genesis chapter 3, verse 17, because you've listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree about which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat from it. cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall grow for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, because from it you were taken, for you are dust, and to the dust you shall return. And that word for dust is the exact same word in Hebrew for ashes. Huh. And so here you have the red heifer, you know, take its ashes after you've burned it and mix it with
water.
Living water. It actually says living water. So here's the two symbols from Genesis 3, because the next thing, he turns to Eve. She's Eve because she's the mother of all the living, right? Then verse 22, from the tree of life, verse 23, therefore the God sent him out from the Garden of Eden to cultivate the ground from which he was taken. So he drove the man out, and at the east of the Garden of Eden he stationed the cherubim and the flaming sword, which turned every direction to guard the way to the tree of life. So life and dust are the two images in the second half of Genesis chapter 3, and here's both of those, that living water and then the dust of the sacrifice, all surrounding the idea of death. It's just abhorrent to the Lord. So he's made a way to be cleansed from that. And obviously we know, as we're just in Numbers chapter 19, but as you finish the story of the Bible, he's taken complete care of that whole issue. He's conquered death.
Right. The issue that's at hand right now.
It's a major thing that everybody faces. And we could say it, you know, everyone in life faces death, and he's overcome that. And so here in Numbers 19, you're seeing these symbols come to the fore and how that would communicate to the Hebrews, you know, the toil they have to go through because of sin, you know, original sin in Genesis 3, but their sin is very manifest throughout this whole episode.
Sure.
So that's what's going on in chapter 19. Historically, they've got to purify themselves. Death is rampant in the camp. You know, so many are being killed out of faithlessness. The younger generation's coming up, but they're not fully there yet. And so they need this sacrifice to take care of it. Abhorrence in the camp. So, with that in mind,
what is it about hyssop, Bob? What is hyssop?
It's like a plant that you could use, almost like a paintbrush, you know. So take that. That's what they used, for instance, back in Exodus, to paint the blood of the lamb on their door,
so that the angel of death would pass over.
It's something that you can use to just spread. Well, it's basically like a paintbrush.
Okay.
So, Numbers chapter 20 now. This is a... You may not have found that last chapter fascinating, but I did. But chapter 20 is big, okay? And I don't like saying... Part of me doesn't like saying that because that almost implies other chapters aren't. Whereas it's all big, but you'll see what I mean. You might be shocked at this. Then the sons of Israel, the whole congregation, came to the wilderness of Zin in the first month, and the people stayed at Kadesh. Now Miriam died there and was buried there. There was no water for the congregation, and they assembled themselves against Moses and Aaron. The people thus contended with Moses and spoke, saying, "If only we had perished when our brothers perished before the Lord. Why then have you brought the Lord's assembly into this wilderness, for us and our beasts to die here? Why have you made us come up from Egypt to bring us into this wretched place? It's not a place of grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, nor is there water to drink." Then Moses and Aaron came in from the presence of the assembly to the doorway of the tent of meeting and fell on their faces. Then the glory of the Lord appeared to them, And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take the rod, and you and your brother Aaron, assemble a congregation and speak to the rock before their eyes, that it may yield its water. You shall thus bring forth water for them out of the rock. Let the congregation and their beasts drink. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord, just as he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly before the rock. And he said to them, listen now, you rebels. Shall we bring forth water for you out of this rock? Then Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came forth abundantly, and the congregation and their beasts drank. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you have not believed me to treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. Those were the waters of Meribah, because the sons of Israel contended with the Lord, and he proved himself holy among them.
That's like a landmark moment.
Did I not say this is pretty big?
Yeah. And I don't remember where, but didn't Jesus say he was that rock, right?
1 Corinthians 10, Paul says that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll get to that.
Yeah. So it's
okay, right now, as you just read the story, it's just some rock.
Right.
Who knows, you know, around the corner in the wilderness or... For right now, it's just a rock. Okay, we'll get to your point. That's great. That's where we're
And they're complaining again.
Okay, they're complaining again. So, Jack, any questions on this?
Well, didn't he disobey God?
It looks like he did. I'll tell you, this is one of the passages that I've literally lost sleep over this. Going, man. Because from reading this story, you know, from page one back in Genesis, Moses is as good a guy as you could have.
Right.
And you get this one little glitch, and it really does look little to me. I mean, I understand, you know, the people are complaining again, but God said, take the staff. And so he does, and hits the rock. When God said, just speak to it. And he hits the rock, and God goes, hey, hey, hey. You didn't treat me as holy before the sons of Israel. You're out. You're not going in the land. And I'm like, for that, you don't. And he doesn't make it into the land.
I didn't even catch that, Bob. That one flew right by me. That, you know, what he was commanded to do. And
speak to the rock.
And he hit it.
And he hit it.
Twice.
I mean, he's mad. Moses is mad, right? How many times is he going to have to go through this with the people? So his human frailty, you know, was on center stage. So that's the point, you know, one of them. I take three or four points out of this passage, but that's one of them, is we're so frail. I mean, even the greatest leaders of God's people have been frail.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like Moses has taken this on himself to do. You know, he says in verse 10, and Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly before the rock, and he said to them, listen now, you rebels, shall we? I mean, it's like him and Aaron? What? Shall we bring water for you out of. No, God's going to do. What? You know, I think he's confusing things here. He's angry.
Out of his frustration.
He's out of patience, you know, which I'd have been out of patience 39 years ago. I mean, he's made it way longer than I would have, but he's out of patience. And that's not the right way to say it. The Lord is not. You know, I think it's a legitimate request. They're thirsty. The anger behind it is not right. You know, I wish we would have died. Why'd you bring us out here? Okay, that's wrong. But they are thirsty. I mean, God doesn't, when he shows up, he doesn't go, are these guys again? Again, there's, right. You know, he goes, okay, go to the rock and say, I mean, it looks like he's being patient about this. And Moses isn't. And he hits the rock twice. And God still waters the people. But, hey, you didn't. There's a big responsibility when you lead. When you lead God's people. So let's read
now,
this.
Now, question real
okay.
quick. Has God already by this time told this generation they weren't going into that land that he was promising them?
That's a good question. You really, by this point, we're getting pretty far along here. We're getting towards the end of the 40 years, actually.
Right.
And so you have a mixed generation now. You have all the guys who came out of Egypt, but many of them have died. And you have their children coming up, but they're not fully grown yet as far as, they're not the leaders, they're not in the prime of their adulthood. So it's mixed.
Gotcha.
Right now. But let's read specifically what God says about this. So verse 12, you know the scene. Verse 12, but the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you have not believed me.
Not believed in me.
Yeah. I mean, what was the command? Just speak to the rock. And he didn't. He hit it. God's saying, you didn't believe me. You're out. How has anybody ever, you know, in the in and out language? You know, is heaven and hell, who's in, who's out, that kind of stuff. What's the one requirement for getting in? Believe. And here's God going, you didn't believe me. Now, Moses is saved, as we use that term. Mm-hmm. He believes God for salvation. But at this moment, he didn't believe
just you human.
Yeah. So, in your own life, consider it. You know, reflect back and look forward and think, were there times when I just simply did not believe what he had said?
Mm-hmm.
And erase those times. And from now on, go forward believing every word that he says.
That's a great point, Bob. That's a great point.
So, yeah, you did not believe me to treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel. You hit the rock? Like it was a common thing? And just as you said, let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, because there's more going on here than meets the eye. So 1 Corinthians 13, it's around verse 10. 1 Corinthians 10. I never was that good of a chapter and verse guy. So let me read in 1 Corinthians 10. We'll start from the first verse there. For I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink. For they were drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not well pleased, for they were laid low in the wilderness. Now, these things happened as examples for us, so that we may not crave evil things as they also crave. Let's keep reading. Do not be idolaters, as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink, stood up to play. Nor let us act immorally, as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in one day. Nor let us try the Lord, as some of them did, and were destroyed by serpents. That's coming up. Nor grumble, as some of them did, and they were destroyed by the destroyer. Now these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed that he does not fall. No temptation has overtaken you, but such as is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also, so that you will be able to endure it. So, a lot of things in that passage from Paul.
Well, yeah, Paul. I mean, that was almost some great commentary about what we're talking about now.
It's exactly what he's talking about.
Story.
He's talking about the Book of Numbers and
right
using
here.
It as an example, going,
yep,
"Don't be like those guys.
Yep.
Don't fall into the same traps that they fell into. It happened to them, but it was written down for you,
mm-hmm,
so that you would know to be aware of these kinds of things." And he goes, "That rock was Christ." And how would you know that from that story? You know, we could ponder that for a long time. And he's saying they ate the same spiritual food and drank the same spiritual drink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've often talked in here and on Sunday mornings as well that spiritual doesn't mean non-physical.
Right.
That was real water that came out of that rock and real food, you know, that God was sending every day, the manna. So spiritual doesn't mean non-physical. Maybe Paul's using it there in the sense of source. It's the source of the food and of the water was spiritual. You know, God's power provided it. Perhaps that's what he means. But that's Jesus with that group.
Right.
And Moses hit that. So, and keep this in mind too, we are in the middle of the Pentateuch, the first five books, which is called the Law. And right in the middle of that law, you have God saying, "You didn't believe me." The law always was about belief. It's not like Moses didn't keep the law.
Right?
There wasn't some sacrifice he didn't do or whatnot. It was he didn't believe. That's always been the issue. The law was never provided as a means of salvation.
Well, and you know, how many times has, you know, questioning God not really worked out? You know, and...
Yeah, he's quite patient with you, but ultimately,
yeah,
he doesn't like that. I wouldn't.
Yeah, if you're coaching,
Sophia's saying to me every, you know, "I don't believe that. I don't." Man, I'd get pretty short with her pretty quick.
Yeah, by 32, if she says, "You know, Dad, I don't believe that stove is hot still," and
mm-hmm,
burns herself yet again. You know, by that point in time,
let me just buy five stoves.
Right. Yeah, let's really get this done
and burn the whole thing off. Okay, so. Look, there's our own impatience showing, just
right,
like Moses, right?
Right.
Where God, day in, day out, is hanging with these guys. Okay, let's finish out chapter 20. Start in verse 14. From Kadesh, Moses then sent messengers to the king of Edom. "Thus your brother Israel has said, 'You know all the hardship that has befallen us, that our fathers went down to Egypt, and we stayed in Egypt a long time. And the Egyptians treated us and our fathers badly. But when we cried out to the Lord, he heard our voice and sent an angel and brought us out from Egypt. Now behold, we are at Kadesh, a town on the edge of your territory. Please let us pass through your land. We shall not pass through field or through vineyard. We shall not even drink water from a well. We shall go along the king's highway, not turning to the right or the left, till we pass through your territory.' Edom, however, said to him, 'You shall not pass through us, or I'll come out with a sword against you.' Again, the sons of Israel said to him, "We shall go up by the highway. And if I and my livestock do drink any of your water, then I'll pay its price. Let me only pass through on my feet, nothing else." But he said, "You shall not pass through." And Edom came out against him with a heavy force and with a strong hand. Thus Edom refused to allow Israel to pass through his territory. So Israel turned away from him. Now when they sent out from Kadesh, the sons of Israel, the whole congregation, came to Mount Hor. Let's pause there, because then we're going to get the death of Aaron next. So what? Who's Edom again?
I don't remember exactly who Edom...
Esau.
Oh, that's right.
And their relationship with Israel is complex. Sometimes they act in concert, you know, as brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they don't. And here's Edom going, "Oh, you're not even going to pass through here." Now, there's no command from the Lord to go through there. I mean, I don't know what's really... It's not like God said to Moses, "Now go through Edom." It's just Moses doing it. So, I'm not sure if this passage is there to show, you know, here's Moses on his own, right? He didn't believe God. Now he's just going to try to lead the congregation somewhere, and they're not going to let him. I don't know if that's what's going on. I don't know. But
another sense there is that, like you talked, I don't remember if it was this morning or last week, about how God uses, even if he has to, you know, hundreds of thousands of people to, you know...
Oh, sure. It's all under his control.
Yeah.
No question.
And this is saying there is no passage to the promised land.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But also, this comes up in Amos. And Amos is like, remember when Edom wouldn't let you go through? I mean, this is being recorded. You know, they're letting Edom play their cards now, but that's going to be remembered. It's not going to work out well for Edom, you know, that they
right.
oppose the Lord's people. But also, down through the scriptures, when someone is referred to as an Edomite, it's not good. The guy who cut off Saul's head was an Edomite. David, he comes to David, "Hey, look, here's Saul's head. You know, aren't you happy?" David says, "You know, who are you? I'm an Edomite." Kill him. You know, how you struck down God's king as an Edomite. And also, you remember the book of Esther, Haman is an Edomite. I mean, it's not... You get referred to as an Edomite from here on, it's not good. So,
gotcha.
It's verse 23. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron at Mount Hor by the border of the land of Edom, saying, "Aaron shall be gathered to his people, for he shall not enter the land which I have given to the sons of Israel, because you rebelled against my command at the waters of Meribah. Take Aaron and his son Eleazar and bring them up to Mount Hor, and strip Aaron of his garments and put them on his son Eleazar. So Aaron will be gathered to his people and will die there." So Moses did just as the Lord had commanded, and they went up to Mount Hor in the sight of all the congregation. And after Moses had stripped Aaron of his garments and put them on his son Eleazar, Aaron died there on the mountaintop. Then Moses and Eleazar came down from the mountain. When all the congregation saw that Aaron had died, all the house of Israel wept for Aaron 30 days. And that's the end of chapter 20. Book of Numbers, pretty bleak.
Well, yeah, the geography of nowhere.
That's right. How do you get out?
Obey your way out.
How do you stay in?
Disobey.
Disobey, just like Moses.
Well, and the interesting thing here, you know, we bring up a lot of coaching analogies, and, you know, I've gotten called into the coach's office before and, you know, knew that it wasn't going to be a great thing,
mm-hmm.
but man, Aaron, just this day, I mean, I don't know how much time has transpired, you know, between all this.
Aaron's got to be close to 80 years old.
Yeah. And just that day, he said, go ahead and bring him on up.
Yeah, it's time. Make the transition to his son. And they, but they, there's some, it almost like shame involved, though it, you know, it's on a mountain, so there's honor in that, you know, high up so everyone can see the transition to the son. You know, no one should question Eliezer's right now to be the high priest. So there's a mixture of ideas going on. There's respect for Aaron, but there's also some, you know, stripped of your,
yeah,
your insignia of your office,
vestments.
You know, your robes. And
yeah. And, you know, before, with the death of, you know, others, they said, you know, where they were buried.
Yeah.
And there is no, they don't.
Yeah, for Moses either.
You know.
That's right. But, you know, it does say again, because you rebelled against me.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, pretty serious repercussions for the Lord's leaders, you know, who don't follow him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, pretty serious.
Well, and I think this is, you know, a part of, you know, the Bible that a lot of people will get to and say, oh, holy cow, you know, well, then I guess I'm out and, you know, there's no reason for me to read the rest, you know, or I don't have that type of obedience, you know. It's pretty bleak,
mm-hmm.
as you said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without knowing the full story, you could get to this and say, well,
mm-hmm.
God just struck him down for that. You know, is that really fair?
Yeah, that's right. So, some sobering words. Anything, Jack, as we wrap this one up?
Mm-hmm. I think you guys kind of covered it all.
Okay. Let's say a prayer. Lord, some sobering words of yours, and even as we sit with you together in your chair, and you read your words to us, we're saddened by them.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we know the entire story. Our hearts are lifted because of that. And we thank you so much that death, one of our three great enemies, along with the devil and sin, has been completely defeated. We're so grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, Lord, as we look out to the world, we do so with sober eyes, but we do also with eyes full of hope, for you've secured our futures. In Jesus' name we thank you. Amen.